so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Welcome into Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. On today's show, the guru of functional fitness, the godmother of BMX, and a woman whose deepest, darkest demons were finally exorcised by a paintbrush. You know, we share a lot of research and we quote experts here at Growing Bolder, but the one thing that actually inspires lifestyle change is the relatable example of someone like us. And that's pretty much what Growing Bolder has specialized in over the years, finding these ordinary people who are living extraordinary lives and then sharing their stories with you. And of course, once we inspire others to make changes in their own lives, the first question is always, okay, so now what do I do? How exactly can I gain strength and improve my balance? How can I prevent or slow cognitive decline? How can I maintain my independence? And that's why I'm grateful to have worked with Dr. Cody Sipe over the years. Dr. Sipe not only understands the science and conducts the research, this is a guy who translates it into programs that anybody can understand and benefit from. In fact, for over 30 years now, he's worked with older adults, and he has not done it to build bikini bodies or six-pack abs, but just to build functional fitness, the kind of fitness that actually supports aging in place and will lead to active longevity. Dr. Sipe is a professor. He's an exercise physiologist who's certified in lifestyle medicine. He's the co-founder of the Functional Aging Institute, the CEO of Marble's Brain Body Fitness, which is the first of its kind cognitive fitness franchise, and he's the author of multiple books, including his latest, Quick Functional Exercises for Seniors. Welcome, Dr. Cody Sipe. Cody, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate your time. I know how busy you are. And in the introduction of your book, you say, gone are the days when we can use age as an excuse to watch life from the front porch. And I know you and I both agree that, you know, watching life from the front porch is not necessarily a bad thing, but we do know that so much more is possible now. What are you seeing? What are you hearing, you know, from your perspective, as an academic?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, we see the stories like you guys put out all the time of amazing individuals who are kind of bucking the odds and defying stereotypes of what we typically look for when it comes to growing older. And case studies are great and they're very inspiring. But ultimately, you know, for me, I've got to look back at the research and say, well, what does the research really support? Are these people really outliers? Are they freaks? Do they have genetics that nobody else has? And so when you go back and look at the totality of research, what you see is this is for everybody, that these things are possible for pretty much anyone to achieve at any stage of their life. And so these case studies, these amazing testimonials that you guys are sharing are just indicative of what is possible if we truly lived an active lifestyle, if we truly embodied the Growing Bolder message, right? If we truly believed and the potential that we all have with aging instead of focusing on the problems that we often look at with aging, that really the sky's the limit. And the research really confirms that.
Well, thank you for that, you know, because I need to hear that. I always feel compelled to offer a disclaimer when I talk to people to say there are no guarantees. This doesn't mean because he or she was able to do this that you will, but these are ordinary people. These are not, as you say, Cody, genetic super freaks. They're not outliers. And, you know, one of the things I really like about your book is that it is written for anyone. It's written for everyone. And you just don't put the research out there. You just don't put the graphs out there. You explain them in a way that makes me think, all right, this makes sense. And, you know, one of the first things that I saw that I really liked is you lay out a graph and you refer to the blue line life and the yellow line life. Can you tell us what you're referring to there?
Absolutely. So there's kind of a concept that we've recognized in aging for a long time called the trajectory of aging or the trajectory of function with aging. And that simply shows that, you know, at some point we kind of peak physiologically in our lives, and then it's somewhat of a downhill trend from there. But there's so much more to the story. And the story is what you are doing with your life is really going to determine the slope of the curve for the rest of your life. So we have some individuals that decline very rapidly and they degrade physically and functionally, leading them open to disability and dependence and early mortality. But then there are other people who are maintaining very high levels of function for a very long period of time and are kind of what we refer to squaring off the curve. And that is they're living well and they're living long. And then eventually we're all going to die, but they die very quickly instead of living for a long period of time in this area of dysfunction and disability. And when you look at what separates kind of those blue liners who are living really well for a long time versus the yellow liners that are declining rapidly, it really does come back to what are you doing every day? And exercise is a major component of that. And as we've seen in even like the Blue Zone studies, that longevity and function is not just related to formal exercise, but just what are you doing every day of your life? Hmm. So as you would agree, like you don't have to be an elite exerciser to achieve so many of the benefits. In fact, in many cultures, they're not exercising at all, but they really are because they're working very hard, very physically, and doing things that most people give up in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even beyond. So the potential that we all have, and this is what I try to really impress upon people. So I've done a lot of work with fitness professionals and teaching them how to work with older adults. And so I'm relaying messages that they are then trying to relay to potential members or clients. And I say, look, the best thing you can do is to show them regardless of their current trajectory, they can change it. Like you can intervene and you can go from this very steep trajectory. You can bump up your function and level off your line for the rest of your life. And that's really what's critical.
And we're hearing this, folks, from a world-renowned researcher who has seen the studies, conducted the studies, and knows it to be true. But Cody, I'm guessing you have to get a little bit frustrated as I do, because you are one voice. Growing Bolder is one voice. There's a lot of us out there. There's a chorus of our voices now, but yet, we have to overcome the course of culture as a whole. And I honestly believe that you really can't change the trajectory of your aging, as you say, unless you believe that more is possible. How do we get people to believe it, to actually buy into the fact, to change their mindset about what's possible?
Well, you're exactly right. The mindset is everything. And we look at the research even on that from Dr. Becca Levy, looking at how you view your aging experience really dictates how well you age, and that positive mindset can make a huge difference. I'm as equally frustrated with individuals because we have to overcome inertia, that we're looking at a culture that has really for a long time kind of celebrated, hey, you get older and then you stop doing stuff and you don't do anything and you kind of sit by the sidelines. And that is changing rapidly, just not fast enough for sure. But what you guys are doing at Growing Bolder and showing is what is possible with everyday people, and that's what I love about a lot of the stories that you share, is individuals that weren't elite athletes earlier, they didn't get into exercise until their 50s or their 60s or sometimes later, and experienced the amazing results and now believe in it in order to carry them forward. So that mindset is really critical, and it's kind of the million-dollar question. If people always ask that, how do we get people to do it? Well, I don't know. We're all still working on it.
We're working every single day, aren't we? And your book is a great pathway to doing just that. And I want to ask you about the structure of your book in a second. But before we get there, Cody, since we've got you, and I love the opportunity to ask you the big questions. I think we all believe, and maybe rightly so, that to some extent there are many age-related diseases. Certainly the incidence of many diseases increases as we age. But I've come to believe that many of these conditions, many of these diseases are as much related to the fact that we've simply, had poor lifestyle for so many years. It's simply the length of time, the number of years we've subjected our bodies to unhealthy lifestyle, and not so much it's just because we're old. It's just that we've gone three, four decades with poor diet. Is there some truth to that?
You're right on the money. There's absolute truth to that, and the research supports that because even with diseases such as cardiovascular disease, the most prevalent disease in the US, the number one killer in the US, and we know that with the right lifestyle, you can completely reverse cardiovascular disease. It's not so much the aging process that's the problem. It's, as you refer to, it's the accumulation effect. The accumulation effect of so many years and decades of a poor lifestyle, which includes poor diet, not enough exercise, not enough sleep, environmental hazards, all that kind of contributes to the incidence of chronic diseases such as cardiovascular disease, many forms of cancer, diabetes, completely reversible with lifestyle. And so people, I think, don't understand how powerful it is because we've all bought in to this kind of medical approach that, all right, you've got this condition now. We can't really cure it. All we can do is treat you and make you a customer for the next 30 years of your life.
So the book is called Quick Functional Exercises for Seniors. And I guess maybe the first question is, how do you define functional exercises? I know you're a co-founder of the Functional Aging Institute. What are functional exercises? What is functional strength?
Good. That's a great question and something that I address in the book as well, because it's important for people to understand that any movement is definitely beneficial. And I'm a supporter of, look, you need to do something. So something is always better than nothing. But what we find is that there are certain types of exercises that translate well to your ability to do the stuff in life that you like to do, that you want to do, that you want to keep on doing for a long period of time. So function is the translation of kind of what you're doing from an exercise standpoint into the benefits that you're seeing every single day. So any exercise can be functional depending on who you are. For example, we might say, all right, if we sit down in a chair and we do a very simple arm curl for my bicep strength, most people say, well, that's not really a huge functional exercise. That's like, what does that really translate to? Well, for you and I, we have adequate strength. So, having a stronger bicep or a bigger bicep doesn't mean too much. But if somebody lacks strength in their biceps, so they're struggling to do daily things like carry their groceries or lift their milk up onto a shelf, then strengthening that muscle in that very simple way would be functional. But in general, there are exercises that have a better translation over into daily activities of living, as well as occupational, sports activities, recreational activities. So when we talk about functional, those are the types of things that we want to focus on, which ends up being a mix of different types of exercises rather than just one thing.
Coming out of the pandemic, it's changed so much. I think everybody realizes we've got to make changes in our lifestyle. We want to exercise. Unfortunately, many older adults either can't afford to go to the gym, they don't want to go to the gym, they don't want to leave their home. A book like this, this is a guidebook that almost anybody can use at home to achieve functional fitness, right?
It is. And I did not want to limit the approach in the book to you have to go to a gym because we know that from a percentage perspective, very few older adults actually go to a gym. Now, we wish it was more for sure, but we know so many more are exercising on their own and at home, and they want to be able to do stuff that's more convenient. They don't want to have to travel somewhere. So this book is written really so anybody, whether you go to a gym or not, could do these exercises and get a lot of value and benefit out of them.
I don't want to throw you a curve now, but I said in the intro that you are a translator, and I love that about you because there's a lot of researchers, and you can read what they write, and you don't understand any of it. But you do research and then you translate it for the rest of us. So if I can you give us a layperson's explanation of three key principles that you have in your book that you say govern, or at least should govern, our exercise? And number one is the principle of adaptation. What is that?
Yeah, adaptation is really important. So, what happens is your body will respond to whatever type of challenge you give to it. So, if you are not challenging your body physically, it's not going to improve. So, adaptation is the process of growth that comes from stimulating very specific systems of our body. So, if you want to get stronger, you have to do strength training, right? If you want to become more powerful, you have to do power training, and you have to do it to a level enough to challenge your body in order to make it change and improve. So we always have to be challenging our bodies in different ways. And this includes areas of like balance and mobility and gait and endurance, all the things that are important to be able to function well.
And secondly, you mentioned the principle of specificity. What's that?
So specificity is that how the adaptation applies to what you're doing or what you're wanting to accomplish. So a really great example of this is especially today, there's a big focus on strength training for older adults and for longevity. Strength training has a myriad of benefits. So I'm not saying it's not valuable. However, what we see from the literature is that if you really want to improve your balance, strength training is probably not going to improve your balance very much. You need to actually do balance training and focus in on specific techniques and strategies and movements that will challenge your balance in different ways. So that's specificity. Strength training specifically makes you stronger. It doesn't necessarily then carry over to some other areas that are important, such as balance and mobility.
And finally, you might have touched on this one a little bit in adaptation, but the principle of progressive overload.
Yes. So a lot of people miss out on this too, because I see this a lot in physical therapy. So I actually teach in a physical therapy program and talk to a lot of therapists. And one of the things that we see, especially in older populations, is they will go to therapy and for some problem. And so they will have a program that they do in therapy and they will get better from that. And then they go home and they keep doing that therapy program. So the therapy program took them up to this level, right? They got an improvement and they adapted and now there they are. And so they keep doing that therapy program and the therapy program kind of keeps them at the same level, but they never adapt anymore. That is, they never improve anymore because their body adapted to the overload or the challenge that was given to them in therapy. If they want to keep getting better, if they want to bulletproof themselves as much as possible from the future challenges that come with getting older and maintain their function, they have to keep challenging themselves in new way. So again, a classic example of if you're lifting weights and a certain weight you're doing is heavy and doing it 8 times is really hard, but you'll get stronger. And so now you can do it 10 times and you can do it 12 times and you can do it 20 times. You've adapted to that load. What do you need to do now? You need to increase the load. Instead of 8 pounds, you need to lift 10 pounds. Instead of 10 pounds, you need to lift 20 pounds. That's how you're going to continue to get stronger. And again, build up those reserves for the future.
Yeah, folks, that's aging in a nutshell. You got to lift more weight. You got to eat less garbage. You know, it doesn't get easier, but it can get better. And the book contains, as we mentioned, I think more than 50 exercises. The title says 50 exercises, but I saw a few more in there. Beautiful, full-color, step-by-step images to illustrate each one. Exercises to improve your balance and mobility, your strength and your power, your posture, your core stability, and much more. And Cody, you've broken it down, the chapters, exercise for cardiovascular endurance, exercises for strength and power, exercises for balance and mobility, exercises for core and posture. Where do you suggest they start? Start at the beginning and just go through it, or is it meant for someone to pick out what they need and go right there?
Well, ideally, my experience in teaching, you know, tens of thousands of people over a long period of time, I never want to just give people a fish. I always want to teach them how to fish. And I feel like that's so beneficial. So while you could go in and say, all right, I'm currently doing some things or I've got a very specific goal, I'm going to skip over to the balance chapter. That's what I want to focus on. And I want to pick out some balance exercises to do. And you can do that. But if you really want to get the most out of it, you really need to start at the beginning because it builds the rationale and the reason for why you need to do not just balance training, but all of the different types of exercises, incorporate those into your program. Now, if just you only have like, I'm only going to do 5 minutes or 10 minutes, that's all I'm doing, I hate exercise, you know, then just go to those chapters, pick out what you need. But ultimately, reading through the whole thing, getting the big picture view, so then you can determine, wow, I didn't realize I need to do some more strength training. Or I always thought power training was something that just, you know, high elite athletes do. I didn't realize it was so beneficial for my function as I get older. So it helps open your eyes to some of those areas that you might not be aware of right now.
When we continue our conversation with Dr. Seip, we will dig into the keys to building a Boulder brain. And then later, a pioneering icon, the oldest female BMX racer in the country, whose example has opened up the sport to girls and women of all ages. This is Growing Boulder.
Support for Growing Boulder provided by
Rides with Uber help give older adults the freedom they need and deserve. Plus, many Medicare Advantage Flex cards help cover the cost of Uber rides to appointments and important deliveries with Uber Eats, like groceries and OTC medication. Learn more at uberhealth.com/card or call 1-866-827-4584. Welcome back to Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton. We are talking today with Dr. Cody Seip, an exercise physiologist who follows the research. This is the perfect guy to ask, how much exercise do we really need to help us maintain functional fitness as we age?
Yeah, that's a great question. Most of the recommendations that you see are based on either minimum or kind of maximum. And what we know is that there's a dose response to exercise. The more you put into it, the more time and energy and effort you give, the more robust of a program you engage in, the better your results are probably going to be. So a lot of people look at it and go, okay, that's great, but what's the minimum? What's the minimum that I need, you know, to do? And it depends on where you are in your life, what your level of function is, and what your goals are. If you are on the lower end of function and you're already struggling with doing some things in your life, you probably need to be more aggressive and more robust in your program than somebody that has maintained a high level of physical ability for a long time, that isn't experiencing any problems, and is really just kind of looking to maintain. So it does depend on kind of what your situation is. What we know is, even from the strength training perspective, if people literally just did 2 days per week, less than 30 minutes a session, very simple routine, they will get benefits from that. Will it be optimal for you as an individual? Maybe not, right? So those are general recommendations, and you've got to look at kind of where you are to determine how much time and effort and energy you really need to put in.
It does seem, Cody, that there is now consensus, if you will, that it is possible to have a biological age, the age that cells and tissues and organ systems appear to be, based on biochemistry, that is different than our chronological age, the number of years that we've actually been alive. Do you believe that? Do you believe that there can be a difference between biological and chronological age?
Yes, definitely. And from experience and working with so many older adults, and I'm sure you've seen this, you espouse this with a lot of your case studies and examples that you're using. You know, there are people that are in their 80s who, when you do even cross-sectional samples of their musculature, you see their muscle looks pretty much like a 40-year-old versus a sedentary person whose muscle looks like a typical 80-year-old. And that is, there are hallmarks of this aging process that show degradation and deterioration that we have identified and we can recognize. And so when you look at people that are active, they're athletic, they're fit, they're engaged in exercise on a regular basis, they physiologically will appear 20 to even 30 years younger than their peers. So there is definitely a valid assessment of biological versus chronological age. And I will add to that this concept of functional age, because this plays into that as well, is how well are you performing? How well are you functioning? And we work with a lot of 70 and 80 year olds who are functioning better than most people 20, 30 years younger than them.
You know, one thing I did not mention about you in the introduction is that you are, in fact, you know, one of the top experts on cognitive fitness as well, and neuroplasticity, which is the notion that, you know, old brains can, you know, in fact, develop new neural pathways. Talk a little bit, if you will, Dr. Seip, about the connection between physical activity, mental novelty, if you will, and neuroplasticity.
Yeah, absolutely. This is very important because the cognitive health is really one of the top concerns that older adults have in survey after survey. And we know that the prevalence of Alzheimer's disease is increasing. It's increasing faster than the older population is growing. So there's a lot of attention on cognitive health. And what a lot of people do not fully understand or appreciate is the link between your physical health, your physical capabilities, and your cognitive health and your cognitive capabilities. So when you are engaged in physical exercise, even if it's the most basic cardiovascular or strength training program, you are actually stimulating your brain physiologically in good ways, and you're setting the stage for the development of new brain cells. Okay. And so when we look at what most people are doing, they're doing mental activities such as brain games or doing Sudoku and crossword puzzles and those sorts of things. Those definitely have a benefit for improving very specific parameters of brain function, but it's not doing everything it needs to really help you build, kind of like you said, those new blood vessels, those new brain cells, those new connections in your brain. So ultimately, a key aspect of maintaining your cognitive fitness and function as you age is moving physically. And the more you can move physically, the better. And even beyond that, if you move in ways that are more challenging from a coordination or a motor control standpoint, then that's going to be even better for your brain. So, for example, I will often throw out to my students, I was like, okay, what is the best type of dance to stimulate your brain and to really improve cognitive health and fitness? And they, of course, they throw out all sorts of different dances. And the answer that I give them is, well, it's all of them and none of them, because the dance that's going to be most effective is the one you don't know, right? It's the movement pattern that you don't know. If you already know how to do a certain, step pattern and choreography, it's no longer challenging to your brain. So trying to couple the movement with the brain being involved is really the key to maximizing cognitive performance.
Well, we appreciate your willingness to talk about all this because, Alzheimer's and related dementias is the conversation that nobody wants to have because the bad news is there is no cure. I mean, once you have it, you got it. But the good news is that research has proven conclusively in the last couple of years that it can be prevented, it can be delayed, it can be slowed by the lifestyle choices that we make. Direct correlation between the two, direct correlation between the lifestyle choices you make and your functional fitness. And folks, you can read all about it. You can find out more by checking out Dr. Cody Sipes' new book. It's called Quick Functional Exercises for Seniors, 50 Exercises to Optimize Your Health. It is, if I may, the perfect gift for yourself or anybody in your life that wants to increase their function, improve their energy, decrease joint pain, and enhance their cognition. Dr. Sipes, thanks so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, the BMX mama, how Miss Kitty not only transformed her life, but an entire sport. And then later, after her mother was abducted and murdered, Audrey Phillips fell into a decade of despair until she painted her way out. This is Growing Bolder. We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live. Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. It's an exciting time because new research about the biology of aging is now coming in pretty fast and furious, and mostly it's because there are now more active adults than ever before. We no longer just think that more is possible. We now know it. Researchers are no longer dealing with theory. They are simply observing fact. And what has been proven is that the so-called normal trajectories of age-related physical decline are not predestined. They're not inevitable, and they are not unavoidable. We now know that physical slowing and decline in muscle mass and bone density are due, at least in part, to a lack of exercise. Period. And that's good news for everybody. It's great news for those of us who are over 50, 70, and even 90, because it's been proven that we are never too old to reap the benefits of physical activity. So, I guess the big question is, why don't more of us get off the couch and actually get into life as we age? And one reason is that the message that more is possible just hasn't gotten through to us, because we have an ageist culture which is pretty much whispering to all of us 24/7 that there are many things we shouldn't be doing. There are many things we're incapable of doing, but it only takes one relatable, one believable example to prove otherwise, and one of those examples is Kitty Weston Naur, the oldest female BMX racer in the country and most likely in the entire world. Now, BMX stands for bicycle motocross. It's a sport in which people on bicycles race through a winding course with hills and jumps. And her example has opened up the sport to girls and women of all ages. And as she now zeroes in on her 76th birthday, she is still aggressively pedaling down a path that she has blazed for herself and now for others. So let's welcome the godmother of BMX racing, also known as the BMX Mama and Miss Kitty, Kitty Weston Naur. Kitty, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. You know, I'm traveling all over the country, racing my bicycle still, and just meeting a lot of women, especially girls and women. Now, I do meet lots of men, but girls and women especially, because I want them to understand, you know what? This is something that you can do at any time and all of the time. BMX is an ageless sport. And I can attest to that because it's 75, going on 76. I'm still at it.
So let's talk about your experience with BMX, because as I understand it, Kitty, you never rode a BMX bike. You never even thought about it until you were about to turn 40 years old. How did you get involved?
Well, my husband and son had been racing BMX bikes for several years. My son, who has now turned 11, said to me, "You know, Mom, if you think this is so easy, why don't you try it?" Mother's Day of 88, I got on Lil Max's little 20-inch bike, mind you. I put on his helmet, which was too small for my head. I had a huge afro. I'm squishing that on my head. I put on his little bitty gloves on my hands, and I got out there with the other mothers. It was a Mother's Day race. Now, didn't necessarily finish first. I finished, though. And I wound up with a whole new respect for this sport of BMX. I have been doing it ever since.
And you have helped change the sport as you've done it. But when you got started back in the day, as I understand it, there were no women's divisions, so you had to race against the men. How did that go? Did they accept you? Were they bothered by that?
So here I am going on 40. My husband is already racing. So we wound up racing in the same age classes until the 90s. And did the men like it? Some didn't. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I'm a very competitive person. I grew up with five brothers. And let me tell you something. I wasn't the oldest. Anything my brothers could do, I had to do better. I just had to. And the same was with BMX, with cycling. And so I trained. I worked out. The nice thing about it was my son was there to give pointers. Here's his mother getting pointers from her son. Best thing in the world. And so as time went on, I started encouraging other women because they were standing all along the fence. And I'm going, "You're here with the kid." "Yeah, and I'd love to do that. But I'm not going to get out there with those men." So I continued to race with the men.
You know what, Miss Kitty, I get the sense that there's no one exactly like you. But I have to tell you, we've talked to a lot of people similar to you, you know, older adults, in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s who are very, very successful at different kinds of things. And it seems like the story of active aging is always a story of determination, of resilience, of continually bouncing back from setback. And you have had your share, a couple in particular. Let's go back to when you were 44 years old. You took a bad tumble on your bike. You broke your neck. And surgeons were not encouraging, were they?
No, it was a C4-5 cord syndrome. Okay. I was totally paralyzed. And I was told that, you know, Kitty, you may never race again. Because you're not going to necessarily regain full use of your arms and legs. One of the things I was able to do as a result of this accident, one, I told the surgeon, I'm going to walk out of this hospital. I did do that. The second thing was I was going to get back to the physical shape I was in before I had the accident. And the third thing I was going to do was I was going to use this accident, all the hard work I went through in terms of recovery, to let my students know and realize you never ever let anyone tell you you can't do something or that you won't be able to unless you work at it. And that's what I did. It was 2 years before I could feel the bottoms of my feet. But I tell you what, within 6 months, I was back to racing again.
And on you went. But let's jump forward 20 years or so, because now at 65 years old, you've got osteoarthritis so bad. You're in debilitating pain that you had to have both of your hips and both of your knees replaced within a 1 year period. How in the heck do you come back from that to be a BMX champion?
Once again, I had a superb surgeon who believed in what I was doing. Okay. And what he said was, you know, Kitty, we're going to do those hips first. And then we're going to do those knees. And in between my hip surgeries and my knee surgeries, they were a year apart, I was racing again. With my hips, I was back within 6 weeks of racing. Okay. I was on my bike in 9 days, but 6 weeks. In terms of my knees, it took just a little longer because the knees were done in December. But in April, I was back to racing again.
Why do you keep going? What does it do for you?
Oh, why does one continue to live, I would ask. You know, I've been very fortunate in terms of being able to, you know, I have these issues. I have this arthritis. It's not going anywhere. Arthur messes with you all the time. I mean, my hands are horrible. And you need the hands to grip the handlebars, okay? But I'm not going to let something like that stop what I am doing. You know, I haven't just been riding my bike, but I have also been encouraging women wherever I go. Come on out, have a good time. Or better still, women have been coming to me. Women have been texting me. Women have been emailing me. How do I get to do what you're doing? The other thing is, we all have something in our lives that could slow us down if we allowed it to. And honey, I am not about to let something like this slow me down. Under no circumstances will I allow that to happen. I have been dedicating my life to continuing to get more girls and women into the sport of BMX. And I always say to them, you know, you can just do this casually. You can do it locally. If you want to progress beyond that, you can do that also. There are hundreds of tracks all over this country where you can get out there and do your thing. The other thing I also tell them to go along with it, you know, because they're naysayers. Naysayers are all around you. And that's why I say you never, ever let anyone steal your joy. Because for me, this is joyful. And so if this is something you truly enjoy doing, go for it. And don't let anyone say to you, you can't or you shouldn't or I don't want you to.
What should we know about life in general that you have learned. What's the message you'd like to share with everybody just about living a big, bold, meaningful, joyful life?
There are two very important mantras that go with me wherever I go throughout this country. One of them being that my life is not about me. My life is about we and thee, and I want to make sure I am sharing that with others. I have been doing it forever and a day, okay? And the other one being, never ever let anyone steal your joy. What brings you joy to you? And it's not the same for everyone, but for me, joy is not just racing my bicycles, but I have other bikes that I love to ride, and just riding and being out there and sharing that love of cycling with others. You find something that has great meaning in your life that you can share with someone else. Go for it. Don't let anyone tell you you can't.
And one of the strengths that we get as we get older, you know, is born of resilience, the fact that we know we can bounce back, something you certainly know. So let me ask you this. You're about to turn 76. Look ahead 10 years, if you can, and tell us what kind of life you expect to be leading at 86.
This is interesting. I've ordered an adult-sized tricycle, geared tricycle. It is going to be an e-trike. I have an e-bike, and I ride it. But here's something I know. I know there's going to come a point in time when I will not be able to race BMX, but that is not going to stop me from cycling. So I'm going to have my e-trike, and this sister is going to be riding all over Kingdom Come.
I love that. Many older adults lose their voice, and I mean that figuratively, as they get older. And, you know, they still have something to say, something to share. It's obvious, Miss Kitty, that you've not lost your voice. You take great pride in being able to continue to give back. And, you know, what I haven't mentioned is you're a former teacher and assistant principal and principal. You've won every kind of civic award that there is. You've been an advocate and activist in your community in Des Moines in just about anything and in everything. You enjoy being a role model, being an example. Tell us what you get out of still having a voice and not becoming irrelevant and insignificant in your mid-70s.
It's about looking down the road into the future. How am I impacting those who are following? And I want to make sure that those who follow understand that they too must be in a position where they are giving back. I don't look for accolades and awards. I have them, yes. But what is important is that I continue to be a good citizen, a good person within my community who's helping to make a difference for others. And know that that is happening.
Amen. Kitty Weston-Naur, thank you so much. I mean, folks, this is a woman who found her passion in BMX racing for decades. She has brought that same joy, that same passion to thousands of girls. She's taken girls and women along for the ride in her sport of BMX. Kitty, thank you so much for your time, and we will certainly be following your racing escapades in the years ahead. Keep it up.
I will. You better believe it. And thank you.
Coming up, Audrey Phillips received the phone call that no one wants to get. A call that began a 10-year descent into darkness. How she turned her life around next on Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
Abstract threats to noble, to neglect.
Welcome back to Growing Boulder. When Audrey Phillips was 33 years old, her mother was abducted in a robbery of her consignment shop. Just a day later, her body was discovered in the woods miles away. Totally traumatized, Audrey turned to meditation, to medication, to yoga, and multiple forms of therapy, but she was just unable to ease the pain and silence the screams for more than 10 years. Her breakthrough began when she put a paintbrush in her hand and started painting for the first time in decades.
I had the family tragedy of my mom being killed. There was a 10-year healing journey that I went on. And at the very end, one of my best friends brought me out to Santa Fe and said, we're going to just spend a week just painting and drawing. And it was like a force that came through me. And I just started painting these really raw faces. It changed me in such a deep way because somebody else did that to her. It's like, now do I trust humankind? I think that's why when I first started doing the art that I drew faces, because I felt so ripped apart and shattered. I would look at myself in the mirror and say, I don't understand why my face looks the same because I'm so completely different. It was life-changing to have this force move through me to create all this stuff when I hadn't created anything in, gosh, probably 20 or 30 years. So my journey began as a healing process, not with the intention of me showing work or anything. It was totally about just a journaling process to work through my emotions.
It was an act of artistic creation that helped Audrey get past her pain and suffering, which initially was reflected in her art, but ultimately it was defeated by her art. And yet it's another great example of the power of creative engagement. In fact, a long-term study that was published in the Journal of Aging and Health examined a variety of different personality traits and concluded that creativity actually confers significant life-extending benefits. Subjects who exercised their creativity on a regular basis enjoyed a significantly lower risk of Alzheimer's disease and a 12% decrease in mortality over an 18-year period. Now, the good news is that creativity exists in all of us. It's part of human nature. It's the things that you do every single day when you cook, when you write an email, or you pick out an outfit for the day. So don't ever say you are not creative because you are, and don't ever say it's too late to develop or improve your creative abilities because it isn't. Lean into your creative side because that is Growing Boulder. You know, at Growing Boulder, we talk a lot about the importance of purpose as we age because purpose is what fuels active longevity. Most of the active centenarians that we've interviewed over the years still have things that they want to do every day because really at some point, if we have nothing to get up for, most of us just stop getting up. Dr. Richard Leiter is an internationally known expert on the power of purpose. Forbes, in fact, has called him one of the top five most respected coaches in the entire world, and he tells Growing Boulder, the one thing we all need is purpose.
Purpose is not, not a luxury. It is something that we do in our spare time. It is fundamental to health, to healing, to happiness, and ultimately to longevity. Purpose is the answer to the question, why? Why do I do what I do? Even with your to-do list, as you talked about, you know, if you look at your to-do list and ask yourself, why am I doing this? You're into living purposefully in certain ways. So purpose is a verb. Let me say it again. It's a verb. It's what we do, not just you can have a purpose. That's one thing. But living purposefully is action. And it's something that you do on a day-to-day basis. There are 1,440 purpose moments every single day. And so the key is, what do you do in just one of those moments to make a difference in someone else's life? Because purpose is always beyond yourself. It brings meaning to yourself, but it also makes a difference in the lives, in the life of another person or persons.
Dr. Leiter says your purpose doesn't have to be purpose with a big P. It doesn't have to be something that's noble. It doesn't have to be saving the world. It only needs to be purpose with a little p. Nothing more than getting up in the morning and trying to make a minute difference in somebody else's life. One minute act in those 1,440 potential purpose moments that we all have every day. And finally, did you know that Growing Bolder is also available as a podcast on NPR One, Apple, Spotify, and Google? So do me a favor, make sure to subscribe and tell your friends, because we're all in this together. And if you haven't yet checked out our new streaming platform, please do. It's at watch.growingbolder.com. It's filled with videos of hope, inspiration, and possibility, available 24/7 at no cost. Thanks for listening and being part of the Growing Bolder movement.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming rope, using ideas as my map. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. So much older than I'm younger than that now. Half right prejudice leap for rip down all hate I scream. Lies that life is black and white spoke from my skull I dream. Romantic flanks of musketeers foundation deep. So much older than I'm younger than that now. In a soldier's stance, I aim my hand at the mongrel dogs who teach. Fearing not, I'd become my enemy in the instant that I preach. Sisters fled by confusion boats. Mutiny from stern to bow. Ah, but I was so much older.